Welcome to Tip Top, growing up your business with Metronomics. We will be talking with business thought leaders, entrepreneurs, CEOs, and business team coaches who have all taken the journey to grow up their businesses to their tip top. We will be sharing strategies, systems, and stories on how you can grow up your company at the speed you want. If you are searching for your path to the tip top and feel your time is running out, then this podcast is for you. I'm your host, Shannon Susco. Well, hey, everyone. Welcome back to our Tip Top podcast. We have a great guest today. Brad Giles is with me, and Brad and I have a lot of history. We might talk for a really long time today. No, just joking. We're going to keep it short and sweet to the point, but we do have quite a few topics to cover. Now, as we work through today, we're going to get a little background on Brad. I'm not wasting any time to give you background other than Brad Giles is an amazing coach, an exceptional entrepreneur, and really, really focuses on impacting those who want to grow and make a difference. So, Brad, with that, just start and start us off and give us a little like entrepreneurial background and your journey on that part, because it sort of sets up some good context for what you do today.
Shannon, and thank you for the kind words. I guess I've always been an entrepreneur in my heart. I've started 7 companies now across a range of industries. Wow. And some of them have gone quite well and some of them have not gone so well. But I've always been really curious about how to build great companies. And I've always wanted to really, that's been the common thread that's been woven through everything. Just how do you build great companies? And yeah, I just absolutely have always loved the idea of being responsible for your own success and being able to really own that. I grew up in a family where I didn't really know any entrepreneurs. I was adopted. There's a nugget gate. And my birth family were all entrepreneurs. Wow. Yeah, generations and generations. And I was in an adopted family where no one was entrepreneurs. In fact, they were the opposite. They were public servants. So It was just in my DNA. Yeah. And I've just always loved it and always been a really big fan of business.
Well, one of the things I really loved is about your background and how humble you are about the 7 companies you've been a part of and the journey you've been on. But now you are a coach. You've learned many different genres of coaching. You do, full disclosure, everyone, Brad's a Metronomics coach, but Brad grew up in a lot of different genres and of coaching and frameworks. And just, you use the word curious. So talk a little bit about, you know, now you've come over to the, I'm going to call the coaching side of the world, though I know you sell some businesses out there along the way, but talk a little bit about the coaching side of it. How did you end up being a coach? We all have a story.
You know, the Dunning-Kruger effect, right? The older I get, the more I know, the less that I know. When I was a teenager in my early 20s, I'd go to parties and I'd be the one having a deep and meaningful conversation in the corner, right? And when you think about when we've socialized in the past, you'd be like, oh yeah, no, that's definitely you. I've just always been a bit more of a thinker and always, I guess, helping people and working through their issues, helping them to become better. And it was just innate inside me. And when I had employees in businesses, it was what I would be doing as well.
Yes.
So I guess with that, the coaching side of it was one part of it, the one-to-one disentangling issues.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then I guess a dozen years ago, I had exited a business and I'd thought to myself, what did I love the most? And I applied the hedgehog concept to myself from Jim Collins, which is what can you be the best at? What are you deeply passionate about? And what can you earn money on? And during that reflection, what I realized is I loved the offsite leadership teams the most.
Right.
That was what I really, really, I loved the deals.
Yeah.
That was great. But if I really took the ego away from it all, I loved that. And how could I do that every day? So those two things came together.
Well, I mean, it's really cool because on your journey, we met along the way as fellow coaches. We got along right off the bat because of our geeking out on different strategy frameworks, different people tools, back to strategy again, Then we'd go to execution. Oh, back to strategy again. Talk about that journey, because as a coach, you know, I feel that I have to learn the same pace of my high growth companies, all of them. So yeah. We're drinking from the fire hose still. You know, we're not only, we're leaders of our businesses drinking from fire hoses to learn everything we could, or we're still doing that to stay ahead of our companies. Talk a little bit about that, because I can see all the books behind you on your shelf. I recognize many of them, read many times, but talk about some key influence or maybe thought leadership or frameworks that really made a difference.
Sure. I'm going to start by saying during the breaks when we're working with leadership teams, we have a slide deck that we put up, and it's all thought leaders with famous quotes, right? And there's one there that's Michelangelo and it's his photo and it says, "I am still learning," and his age is 89. We got to stay curious. We got to stay humble. We got to keep learning. It's a job that's never done and we've got to keep doing it. I mean, we play in a very specific space, which is the mid-market. There's a lot of stuff written about enterprise, about enormous companies, and some of that is relevant and some of that we can, let's say, translate into our language. And there's a lot that's written about the startups, but there's not a lot written about the mid-market. And we know the story about this is where we get the greatest energy, where we can have real impact with people, that creates jobs, that creates meaningful change in people's lives. So, I mean, we go to people like Top Grading with Brad Smart, born of the enterprise with General Electric, but translatable into the stuff that we do. Jim Collins, such a fabulous researcher and storyteller.
I see all the books behind you. I'm like, I want to do a reread of all of them because, like, I haven't done that. I usually do once a year. I go through all the books. And depending on what your frame of mind is what you take away from it or reminded about, right?
That's right. You read the same book and you go, oh, I finally get that. That really clicks with me now. You know, the worst thing is when you read your own book and you go, oh, that's really interesting. Oh, that's right. I wrote that.
It is. That is the hardest thing to do.
It is. Yeah. So the main thought leaders really, you know, we can draw from the Porters, the Druckers, the Jim Collins, all of those people. I mean, we swim in the same pool.
And thinking about your coaching business today, what kind of companies do you coach today? What size of companies? Sort of where is your passion right now when it comes to coaching CEOs and leadership teams?
It's a word that you've used many times over the years, actually, that has influenced me. It's about impact. How can I and we impact more people? So we've got a very small firm here. We work with companies from probably 5 million and the largest would be 300 million across Australia and New Zealand. We've got clients and it's about impact. During the pandemic, our borders were closed in Australia to the world. Yeah. And in my state, they were also closed. We couldn't even fly to other states. So we started working with a client in another city at that point, and I didn't even meet them in person for 18 months.
Wow.
And we had some amazing results with them. And I remember they said to me, there are 150 people here you've never met, you don't even know, but you've changed their lives. Yeah. And so that impact is really rewarding.
It is, actually. I totally, it sort of gives me goosebumps because that's why we do it. And we've had similar experiences and similar support being coached ourselves. So you are based in Perth, Australia, though we're talking about I've never been there. I can't wait to get there this fall. But you also have written two books, soon to be three books. You know, the one that's been on my mind and I've been sharing with all my clients is your latest book called Onboarded, right? And I really want to talk about Onboarded because it's had such a huge impact on the dialogue, the structure. You know, I'm telling Brad before we get on that I had every client of mine read this book. And they're all at different stages of thinking about onboarding, whether they had a very sophisticated system to maybe not as sophisticated as it needs to be, but all had an impact. But you started the book by talking about what is onboarding. And I got to tell you, like an obvious place to start, I'm going to say that. But I can tell you from a coach, I probably should have spent more time clarifying what I thought onboarding was to their definition from onboarding. And you just clarified it right off the bat. Like I got lots of feedback from clients. And maybe talk a little bit about defining onboarding. Why 90 days, right? Because a lot of people are like, 90 days, they sort of like push back in the beginning, sort of like top grading and the amount of time it takes to find an A player, right?
Same idea. So I'm going to preface this by saying, this is a HR book that's not written for HR people. Now, half the audience is going to turn off. But what I mean by that is HR things often get ignored, or people things in our world often get ignored by the CEO because they think, oh, HR will take care of that. But this is written for the entrepreneur and it's written as a business case.
And that's jump in there? Because that was the thing that I was, as a coach, we'd talk onboarding or I'd want to know what the process was, like, because we're having issues somewhere along the way, right? So I want to know what are all the steps. And, you know, the CEO, not all my CEOs, but didn't really want to know that amount of detail.
Yeah.
But the greatest thing is why this book was so well received, and I can vouch for it's for leaders in the organization who are accountable to bring your new team members into the culture easily, quickly. I can go on. So for longevity, right? So it's just really well received because it gave not only the CEO of my teams, but the leaders of my team, you know, vocabulary to talk about this really important step in such a tough market when you find the right person to make sure they're really successful.
Yeah.
So talk a little bit about onboarding because we've talked all around it.
Yeah. So I want to start by saying, what's training? So training is where you teach someone a behavior or a skill. That's pretty obvious. We all know what training is. Orientation is sometimes confused with onboarding, but orientation is helping a person become familiar with a location or a situation. Yeah. So think about orienteering. You'd be looking at the map. So with orientation, this is where the bathrooms are. This is where IT is. This is your parking spot. Those types of things, that's orientation. And then there's another word that's misplaced in this area, which is induction. So this is inducting someone into an organization. So it's like you've then got a license to operate. So you may have your access pass. You may have your pay details, your bank details. You may have signed all the forms. All of those things means that you are fully inducted. You've got a license to operate in the organization. Now, all of those things may form a part of onboarding, but they're not onboarding. So onboarding is the process of taking someone from outside your organization and making them a productive, independent, and confident member of your team that understands the culture, the technical and process expectations, and your expectations as their manager. Now, it begins when a person's signed a contract to work in your organization, and it ends when they're a useful, valuable member of the team.
Yeah, can I jump in there? Because that was one of the greatest things that one of my clients, they have open positions, about 400 right now. And so the greatest thing is it really resonated that onboarding started before they even arrived, right?
Yeah.
On site. It started well before. And we were talking about a couple other my clients who actually had taken that to heart and created that program and all the way through from the contract arriving, signing, what was going to happen. They hadn't even been there. And in this hybrid world, you know, depending on the role, whether they're ever going to really show up on site, right? It's a different world.
Yeah.
So really, really, and taking it hard. And these positions were brick and mortar. So we know people are going to show up. But they just really, really sort of like bright light bulb went off on what a difference they could make in such a competitive landscape. On that simple piece of info.
It really is. And I know you've read the book. So if a person comes into your organization and they don't understand how to succeed, let's say they understand 50% of how to succeed defined by the role scorecard. Well, what if your competitors hire a very similar person and they get to understand 90% of how to succeed? They've got the potential, when you multiply that across their business, to have a greater level of success.
You know, I think the different pieces of feedback I had along the way when we were talking about onboarding and not being clear. I wasn't clear on that definition. The bad thing about assuming what that was, which was not a good thing. This has brought a lot of clarity. But the other thing that brought clarity is really you talk about onboarding, culture, seeding the culture in, all those pieces. Can you talk a little bit more about that? Because that has absolutely resonated with my clients for sure, because they're focused in on the cultural system. They do want their cultural system is alive and well, and they do want, like they have such good intent that everyone they bring on, they want to be ingrained in the culture as fast as they can. But you know, the things they were doing were almost preventing them, like it's almost working against them.
So I want you to imagine this. You get a group of 10 random people together, just picked from all over society, and you bring them together and you say, here's your mission. Your mission is to build a ship. Go for it. There's the wood, there's the cotton and the rope and all of that. Go and build a ship. And then you walk away. And then there's another team that you say, here's the wood, here's the materials. Your job is to build a ship. This is how you succeed in building the ship. Okay, you need to do this, and this is the plans, and make sure you do this type of joins and the woodwork and all of the things. And you spend a lot of time, let's say 90 days, theoretically, helping them to understand how to build the ship and all of the parts in it. Which of the teams are going to have the higher misunderstanding? And then that misunderstanding will lead to conflict. And everybody on that first team is doing the things that they think is right,
right.
But that might not be even the right thing that you know is right. So yeah. I really ask the question, what is the seed of bad culture in the book? Everyone's going to come in and say, yes, I have diagnosed you, Shannon, and you have a bad culture. I can tell because my diagnostic tool tells me that.
Yeah.
And this is how you fix it with our consulting program. But no one actually goes to the root of it and says, how are bad cultures created in the first place? And
yeah.
Part of my thesis here is, well, it happens through misunderstanding because people don't understand how to succeed. And that misunderstanding, that conflict, it grows and it compounds.
Talk a little bit about the onboarding process that you've laid out. And, you know, 90 days, a lot of people go, 90 days, 90 days, yeah. Right? And I just want people to go, 90 days. It has to, you know, about seeding and culturally and all the pieces. But a lot of people will push back and go, oh, I'm good. I do it in 14. We got this. Talk a little bit about the short-term pain, long-term gain, and like where you came up with the 90 days.
So there's a few different areas. First of all, in writing this book, I did a global study about onboarding, interviewing and surveying 1,100 CEOs and hiring managers to understand onboarding debt. What
right.
is the cost of this thing? So the first response to your question is, a part of that, I also looked at the legal liability period. So in most countries around the world,
yeah.
there's a period of time where you can dismiss someone or you can fire someone if without further cost that they would have after that 90-day period. So it's like you've got this probation period in most countries where, okay, it's not really working out, we've got to let you go, and you don't have to pay any, let's say, extra fees, extra fines, extra problems. They get the very bare minimum. And that was in all countries. There was places like Vietnam and Sri Lanka and China, all sorts of countries have got a very similar 90-day period. So in most cases, asterisk, get your own legal advice, in most cases, the law supports a 90-day process. The law is saying, well, we think it's going to take a few months.
Yeah.
I'm going to go back. If you think about a sports team, you think about your favorite sports team, you wouldn't expect a player to come on board and join your sports team and be fully integrated into that sports team in a couple of weeks. It's going to take months for them to become a part of that team. The next part, as a part of the survey that I did, I asked some questions around how well does a new hire understand? And basically the data said that 83% of people have an onboarding process that is 2 weeks or less,
yeah.
but the real understanding starts to happen at 30 days through 90 days, and it just escalates, it just ramps upwards over time. So most companies basically aren't even seeing the benefits of that understanding. And that's the real problem, is that we think, oh, yeah, yeah, they're good. And there's one final point, is that most people forget what they're taught. This is called the Ebbinghaus forgetting curve. Okay.
Yes.
If I teach you something, as a human, most people are going to forget 50% of it after one day. They'll forget after about 3 or 4 days, about 75%. By the time a week goes past, people have actually forgotten 90% of what they've been taught. We need to overcome this forgetting curve. And then we need to layer that across 3 stages in the first 3 months, which is, that means to overcome the forgetting curve, first of all, we want to be in this understand phase so that they can understand how to succeed. And then we move to the second month, because everyone feels the same after a month. They're like, oh, you know what? Like, why am I going through the same stuff? Or I'm still talking to you about core value stories or whatever it is. So we go into the second month, and then it's learn and apply. So this is where they're actually out there and they're being somewhat supported by peers or others in the organization. And then we kind of, we let them go, but we check in them, which is the embed phase, the third month. What we're really trying to do is to transition to leader as a coach at the 90-day point, because that's what we all want, right? No one wants to be micromanaging.
No. And I think, like, from talking through this with many who have that 14-day or less onboarding, and actually after reading the book are like almost embarrassed about it, actually, you know, are very committed. I know some went to 30 days. I went back and talked to them, like, because they're doing some hiring and they're like, nope, 30. And they're asking, they're actually very diligent and committed to actually figuring it out. And they were just trying to like figure out that short term versus long term, right? The pain of it. The other piece of feedback that we had was not only when the team members going through the 90 day, but even the leader and the people involved, they think they're like, they've already communicated a lot of this and they've over communicated it. But we know that that's not true. We know based upon, and I love the forgetting curves. We had a really good chat about that last week with one of my clients, because one of the leaders had just been onboarded. You know, I think they continue, the leaders around the table continuously apologized for that onboarding program that they'd just been through, and they committed to improving it. And one of her pieces of feedback was the forgetting curve, because she felt like, you know, it was just like the fire hoses in 14 days.
Right. You can't remember it all. It's biology. It's just...
And people feel bad because they can't remember it all, but it's really the design of the program.
And then what happens when you go, your time travel into the future, and as coaches, we're there coaching the leader and we're saying, so how do you feel about that person that you're talking about? And they're saying, they just don't get it. Like, they're just not doing the right thing. Right. Yeah. Do they understand how to succeed in their role? Like, how are they mapping against the job scorecard? Oh, they're just not doing it. Do you think that they understand? Well, probably not. That comes back to the leader. That's the leader's responsibility to help them understand.
That's the other thing that I love about that is just sharing the accountability of the onboarding and not having it on the HR team or the people team's like shoulders, like they own it. No. It's the hiring leader owns that. It's really made a difference in that ownership, but that thought process too. I've had so many good conversations about it. And a lot of our companies, you know, already have a scorecard. Like we're founded upon scorecards and metronomics and the way we've coached for years, but not everyone understands a scorecard. So that was an easy part for my clients, but maybe explain a scorecard. And then I want you to talk about, how does that play into the 3 stages of onboarding? I believe I have that right. And then we also talked a little bit about the sprint plan, the onboarding sprint plan, to get people's head around it. It really makes a difference. I know my teams, when they saw that example and they can see that, you know, they're taking it out, they're breaking it down, they're getting it into metronome software, and they're using the template over and over and over again. It's been really good to watch, actually.
Yeah. So we know the job scorecard from Top Grading. Now, I called it the role scorecard, and it's just, it's a full nerd out thing.
No. We call that too.
We would do. But either way, a scorecard is not a job description. I think it's so important because everyone thinks about writing a document about a role, and they think, oh, that's like a job description. I wonder if you've got a template for a salesperson or whatever that I can just copy, then it will be ticking a box and it'll be done. Well, job descriptions aren't specific around the numbers. So in a role scorecard, we want to see things like you will have sold 100 widgets by November 2023 or whatever that is, like very, very prescriptive about what you are accountable for, what the numbers are. And in this book, Onboarded, what I've said then is those expectations. Remember at the beginning of this podcast, I spoke about understanding the technical and process expectations, the manager's expectations, and the culture's expectations. All of those three things have uniqueness within a firm.
Right.
The culture's unique, the manager's expectations are unique, and the technical, the way you do things is unique as well. So there are things that you've got to unlearn from before and things that you've got to learn within this context of success. So the role scorecard specifies what does success look like in this role. If you were to go 100 days into the future and as a manager, you had a massive smile on your face and you were delighted, you'd be like, oh, this is what this looks like. And then probably within reason there on after as well. So the role scorecard is what success looks like in the role. But then the second tool is the onboarding sprint plan. And that is a very clear plan on how to succeed in the role. So we've got the what and the how. Yeah. How do we get this person to understand across all of those elements, the expectations, the understanding, the KPIs, the responsibilities, all of those things? That's the two tools that we talk about in the book.
Like, I think that's why Onboard has been really well received, is because it's very practical, right? Sets you up. Whether you buy in or not in the beginning, because there's been lots of discussion around 90 days, it's all really this long, but you get some really good stats and feedback. You surveyed a lot of people, right, for how we ended up with this. Talk about if someone's listening in and they're like, okay, I'm going to read the book Onboarded, right, by Brad Giles, but talk about making it really work. What are the last, like, what are those things from your experience working with clients? You know, I've got some experience working with clients. You've done it longer than I have. What are sort of some of key like guidance to people who are starting out on this journey and then really wanting to make it stick?
I'm going to answer that. But before that, I want to just break your rhythm. And I just want to talk to that 90 day thing that you've brought up. So why 90 days? Why can't we just do it in 30 days? Because they won't understand.
Yeah.
Like that's the problem, is that the job to be done, Clayton Christensen, the job to be done is to get that person to understand how to succeed. And they may seem to understand, but they won't necessarily understand. And what's the commitment? I break down the time commitment from a manager. And what I'm advocating is 15 hours. So it's a couple of hours to build a sprint plan and a scorecard. A couple of hours on the first day, and that's 1 hour per week. And even if possible, you can take it from 1 hour to 45 minutes to 30 minutes by the end. So then if you're getting to 30 days and saying, do I really need to do another 8 weeks of this? It's not 8 weeks. It's like 6-7 hours or something.
Well, and that's where people get caught up, which I've found very interesting as I've, you know, I've had clients go from 2 weeks to read the book, they go to 30 days. How's that going, right? And this is just from the beginning of the year. And they're actually surveying and getting feedback from those that were onboarded. And there's been leaders that have been onboarded, which has been really good because it's been like really direct feedback. The commitment's high for 90 days. It's just a 90-day program. And as you said, it's the hours that are in there. And I have one client who's been doing it, I don't know. When did I get them to read it? Probably at the beginning of the year, I got them to read it. Did this come out last fall, this book?
It came out in November.
Yeah. So I started out right away and I took it to clients that I wanted to like, you know, make an impact. So my longest has been 6 months because I read it in January, actually January meetings because they're off schedule, got them to read it. And so they went through the sort of process from 2 weeks to 30 days, 30 to 90 days. But that what you just said about the amount of hours is really key. It fell within a quarterly priority for them. That's what we did. It was within a quarter, 90 days. It could have run longer because they hired in the middle of the quarter or whatever it was. But it just became part of their rhythm, which is really important to one of the secrets of success. What are some other secrets of success? I know a CEO might read this, an HR leader might read this, another leader might read this, but now you got to convince the rest of the team. What are some secrets to actually ensuring that this gets adopted?
Yeah, I'm going to close out that last point and answer that question, but I'm not going to do what I just did last time. If you spend another 8 hours with a person in their onboarding period, like what's the negative or positive cost? It's attrition. So the data says that those with a 90-day period, 83%, I think it is, or 82% more likely to stay more than 3 years.
Yes, that's impactful. 83% likely to stay for more than 3 years.
Yeah.
Great ROI. Businesses are losing people within 12 months.
And you're thinking about, should I spend that 8 hours? The net positives are huge. So I'm going to now answer that question. So what are the keys to success, I think? Is that right?
Yeah. What are some key sort of things that you've observed? You suggest some. I know that you're learning too as you're working with your teams. I'm learning working with my teams.
Have a hard decision at 90 days. That's the first one. And I spoke about that in the book.
But
So think about, you're looking at a road and that there's a fork in the road. It goes left and right. On one side, the road is a successful fit and the other one is an unsuccessful fit. The onboarding process tells us that. And I go into detail in the book about the difference between a good fit and a successful fit. But the point is, we want ourselves and our team to force a decision at 90 days. Right, is this person unsuccessful fit and we need to go back to the hiring process, or are they successful fit? Now, I don't like to overlay that with an A player terminology necessarily, because some people are great in a job and they're good and we know it's expensive to go back to hire. But when we look at that original role scorecard that we wrote 90 days ago, is this person a successful fit? How are you rating them around those areas? So force that decision, because without forcing that decision, it's a lot of gray. And then we might get 9 months down the road and we'll go, this person's not really working out so well. Like, they're not really knocking it out of the park or whatever it is. So have that as a hard and fast, because, and if you don't even want to use me or the book or the process, because that's when our legal opportunity changes. So there's that one. Start with the leadership always.
So one of the great news, and I know that this book is written really practical. You know, I love pictures. So lots of pictures, lots of data. Right. Anyone who's been listening to this podcast for a while knows that. Anyone's read my books knows that. But I love that you have, like, you have tools, you have examples all on your website. Is it Onboarded or Evolution Partners?
It's evolutionpartners.com.au, where you can download the resources.
Yeah, that's fantastic. My teams have loved that. What should I've asked you about Onboarded that I didn't ask you that you want to share?
Why did you write the book?
Yeah, why did you write the book?
I'm so glad you asked. I came to feel that misunderstanding is the greatest source of misery in the corporate world today. Not only is it massively underserved, I couldn't find a book that isn't written for the new hire, and it's not written. There's a couple out there, but they really didn't tell the story that needed to be told. And as I look at it, so many leaders are frustrated with their direct reports, and they're frustrated because they don't understand. And it's like, well, it circles back to you because you've got to get them. And it's the greatest source of misery in the corporate world today. You look at messy cultures, you look at frustration, and it's like, if people could understand how to succeed in roles across those areas, like, everyone's lives would be so much better.
Yeah, not only lives, communities, it filters right out there, right? All the way out there. So many people are unhappy in the roles they're in today. Lack of clarity, all kinds of things. You're writing another book right now. Why are you writing that book? And maybe tell us the name or the rough name, or tell us a little bit about your next book.
Yeah, thank you. Because I'm foolish, there's a couple in the wings. There's one I can tell you about. So it's Onboarded for Managers. And so this is, Onboarded is a very good book. If you're a reader, it's about 30,000 words, I think.
Yeah, it's a good, it's a nice, easy read. I want to say that.
Thanks.
Like you pick it up and you're like, yeah, I'm going to get this done.
Yeah. One of the first goals was you've got to be able to read it on a plane flight.
Yes. Now, yeah, I love it.
I'll say that our plane flights from where I live are much longer than the average everywhere else, but you got to be able to read it.
You can read a few of these on that flight.
So yeah, Onboarded for Managers is once you read it as a CEO and you get it, you've got to get everyone else to subscribe. So how do you do that? Because many of our managers and supervisors aren't necessarily into business reading in the same way that we might with the same passion. Yeah. This is a book that whilst Onboarded is the business case and it's written as such, Onboarded for Managers is more of a narrative style and it explains the problem from the manager's perspective rather than the business case.
Look forward to that. Love that. Because that's what I was talking about, right? From, you know, getting leadership teams to read it. But, you know, getting the CEO on board and getting the other leaders to read it is going to be fantastic.
Because it's not their fault. It's not a manager's fault, right? No one is accountable for onboarding. We don't even know, is it HR? Is it? No one's probably ever been fired for doing a bad job of onboarding. There's no KPIs. No. Like there is with hiring, but there's no KPIs for onboarding.
Yeah.
And it's a part-time job, right? So if you look at the average hiring, maybe the average manager is hiring two or three direct reports a year.
Yeah.
And so it just means that all of these things mount up against us doing an effective onboarding process. So that book's designed to address all of those issues.
Yeah, love it. Love it. Along the same theme, again, ensuring the teams understand sort of the, I look at the benefit, the ROI on following the program. And I can't thank you enough for being here because you 20 years, serial entrepreneur, still I know entrepreneuring right out there, coaching, strategic consultant, coach. I know you've got some coaches on your team now. And just I really appreciate you giving your time to share with us Onboarded. It's been a hugely impactful with my clients, the teams I work with. And if you want to learn more, evolutionpartners.com.au. I have that right?
You have that right. Thank you.
Good. And I do want to mention one other book. Your first book was Made to Thrive, right? Great book as well. I've had all my clients read that book as well. They're like, you must know this guy. I said, no, that's not it. But you've been on, and I just heard you say, I love that I heard you say this. You have one more coming and a few more in the wings, books. Heard it here first.
Yeah, you did. Because I'm full. No, because I enjoy it. It's good fun, right?
Well, you know what? You know this and I know this, that when you write a book, you learn more than if you never started out on that journey about the topic. You get so deeply ingrained in it. You have to get it out of your head because it was in your head and you were doing it for so long. You were thinking about it so long. And then you share it with others and you're fantastic at getting feedback from others when you write a book. You're just wide open. Here's where we're going, looking for the feedback. So I really appreciate that. And I definitely have appreciated your book, Onboarded. And I just love being a fellow coach and making an impact with companies around the world. So thank you for being here.
Thank you. And especially thank you to you for not only this podcast, but the effort that you put in is just inspirational for so many people around the world doing different things. And, you know, the amount of people that you've helped indirectly is, I don't think you could have an idea of how much that is. So there's a thank you back to you.
Oh, that's really nice. Thanks, everybody, for listening in. This is your Tip Top podcast powered up by Metronomics. We'll see you again soon.
Tip Top is brought to you by Metronomics. To find out more about Metronomics and how this 20-plus-year-old proven system will save you time and money as you grow up your business, visit metronomics.com. That's metronomics.com. Also, search for Metronomics in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts, or anywhere else podcasts are found.